This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom and Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome back to Mom and Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On our episode today, we have a guest who's sharing her personal story through postpartum depression, anxiety, and OCD. Jessica Cuomo is on to share with us what it's like to have postpartum OCD and the things that she would really like for people to understand about dealing with perinatal mental health, very specifically the importance of seeing a mental health professional. She's also sharing with us about her memoir, A Dance in the DSM, My Tango with Postpartum Depression, Anxiety, and OCD. After graduating from Fairfield University with a bachelor's in English and a concentration in creative writing, she went on to teach high school English for 6 years, library science for 2 years, and currently teaches communications at a local high school. When Jessica had children, she experienced her first mental health crisis, which inspired her to share her story in hopes of helping others who suffer from mental illness. What I really appreciate about Jessica sharing her story is that discussing intrusive thoughts and how to overcome the shame and guilt of those is really challenging. And in order to do that, we kind of have to face it ourselves and understand that something is going on for us that we need and deserve help for. So we're going to get into Jessica's story and hear more about her experience. So thanks to Jessica for coming on and sharing her story. Let's hear from her now. Welcome, Jess. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm grateful that you're coming on to share your story. And I think it's the stories of people who've gone through postpartum OCD and depression, of course, are really important to hear because we tend to hear so much more about depression and anxiety. And I think when people hear OCD, they're like, oh, what does that mean? What is that? Or they might have some misunderstandings about it. So I'm really grateful that you're going to share your experience and help people understand it better.
Thank you so much for having me to talk about it.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So wherever you feel comfortable to start with your story, you can just launch right in.
Sure. So I had my first daughter 11 years ago. I got pregnant 12 years ago. And the mental health landscape in America was significantly different, you know, at that point. And, you know, it's actually improved. We still have a long way to go, but it's improved a lot in 10 years, which is pretty great. I'd been relatively asymptomatic for most of my life. I had a few acute episodes. Now, looking back on my life, knowing what I know now, you know, I can see different flare-ups of, you know, mental health episodes, but I was pretty much subclinical until pregnancy. And right away, I had some perinatal anxiety and OCD and intrusive thoughts. I didn't know what they were at the time, but
this is during pregnancy or postpartum?
During pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I had, I always say this wrong. It's like hyperstasis graviosus or something. I had the thing where you throw up from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep.
Yeah. Hyperemesis gravidarum.
That's it. Sorry. Yeah. I can't even say it. It was so bad. Like if my Zofran wore off at 3 a.m, I was waking up throwing up bile at 3 a.m. Like it was like the craziest thing. My mother had that too. So I had expected, you know, that was going to happen, but I also started to have, I'm going to date myself. This whole conversation is going to be super dating, by the way, but you know, the pregnancy center was really big at, you know, 12 years ago. So I really started to have these like intrusive thoughts about like, and just paranoias about what I was eating, you know, what I was putting in my body, what shampoos I was using, what, you know, detergents, and just like things that could hurt the baby. And so I was really cautious about that. You know, I'm very active and physical, and I was, you know, worried. I was like helping my husband tile our bathroom, and I was like, oh, I lifted too many boxes, you know, just like little paranoia type things that had, I'm neurotic. I'm Italian American. Like that neuroses is like our breakfast cereal. And so it just kind of, you know, it was hard to tell what that was from, you know, whether it was clinical or not. And then it just got unmanageable kind of at that point where not unmanageable, but it got really bad. And my brother had worked at McLean Mental Hospital in Boston. So he had some awareness of mental health issues and some of these things. So I would always like call him in panics, like, you know, I ate a piece of ham. I think I killed the baby. And he'd be like, okay, like you need to just stop, you know?
Yeah, it's really intense.
Yeah. So he helped me significantly, which was amazing. And so, you know, I confess. I always joke that's like the offshoot of being Catholic is one of my OCDs is I have to confess everything. Like, you know, like, let me tell you everything about my life. And so it got better throughout the pregnancy. It ebbed and flowed. As I got closer to delivery, it, you know, got a little bit worse, obviously, as you get nervous to give birth the first time. And then when I did deliver, things were, you know, obviously delivery is intense. Mine was a little bit more, you know, I pushed for like 3 hours and 45 minutes and was awake for a very long time, didn't sleep a lot. And then, you know, symptoms kind of flared after that. Once my daughter was born, I felt this like intense wave of like hormones hit. That's what I experienced it as. I don't know what it actually was.
Yeah.
And so it felt like I was like going down a roller coaster of hormones. And I was terrified of SIDS. So absolutely paranoid, like, you know, you have no control and your baby could just like die at any minute was what I thought. So I did all of the things, you know, I wrapped her like a cigar, like put the binky in the mouth, like leaned her up, like all the things that I could do. She like slept like a aesthetic monk or something, like it was crazy. And then I slept with my hand on her, you know, to make sure that she was breathing. And so I was not sleeping. So by like day 5, obviously things were not going great as far as that goes. I had been discharged and I had seen Shutter Island. I don't know if you're familiar with this movie, but I had no clue about postpartum psychosis, but all of a sudden I was terrified of it. And I thought it was like a possession, like you would just become psychotic, kill your kid and then like wake up from it and be like, oh my God, what did I do? So I was like terrified. So my husband was like, you need to call your midwives. I was like, okay. So I called my midwives and one of them was on call. She was like delivering and it was very hard to get a hold of. And so she said to me, you know, do you have a family history of severe mental illness, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anything like that? And I was like, no. And so she's like, okay, you're fine. You're going to be fine. Like, you know, that you're not going to have it. It's fine. I was like, okay, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
So I felt really good about that because I listened to medical professionals and that was what I had needed to hear at the time. So I was like, good, we're good. Life's good. You know, and it slowly got better and it was slow. Like it was a slow progression. I started to sleep a little bit more. She did say come in for a 2-week screening. So I was like, okay, I'll make it to the 2-week screening. And I was feeling a little bit better to the 2-week screening. I was sleeping like a little bit more. The SIDS thing had calmed down a little bit, not much, but it was okay. But I went to the screening, and 12 years ago, the screening was for postpartum depression. Yeah. You know, that was what it was. Like, are you not experienced? Like, do you find things funny that you used to find funny? And it's like, well, I mean, my day to day is not funny, but like, if I watch a funny TV show, I'm going to laugh at it. You know, like I missed a lot of the symptoms, right? Because mine was OCD, you know, like, yeah, it's funny, but if I think about my kid not breathing, I'm going to go into a full-blown panic. So life got better. My baby was colicky, so that, you know, sucked intensely. And yeah. She, like, you know, that it's normal to not find an infant that screams in your face while she's awake enjoyable. It's not enjoyable. We got her on like Prevacid, which really helped. Like, she stopped screaming in my face. Like, I called the doctor in tears, like, my baby's mad. I gave her life. And he was like, yeah, you got to come in. We got to get her something. And she was better. Like, she ended up being good. And we got into a nice rhythm. And then I went back to work. And
at about how old was she?
She was, I want to say, like, I went back 13 weeks, 14 weeks, maybe. So I, relatively speaking, I had a nice maternity leave. I was only supposed to have like a 6-week maternity leave because I'm a teacher and basically like a factory worker from the 1800s and they want you back at work. They want you back at work as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm kidding. I love my job, but maternity leave was pretty draconian. So I went back and I had real guilt about that, like real aggressive, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, you know, in the Italian American community a lot back in the day, like you stayed home, you took care of your kids. Motherhood was the pinnacle of everything. So I had a lot of guilt about that.
And did, were other people adding to that, like making you feel guilty about it, or, you know, like, oh, you should stay home or that kind of stuff?
Not as much. No, because most people, that I'm friends with, most of my friends, I was one of the first people to have a kid. Mm-hmm. So they didn't, you know, I was kind of the pioneer of all of this. So no one really had too much to say. And in some ways, the expectation is to go back to work, you know, like, you know, other than outside of, you know, my family. So it was kind of a mix of, you know, I needed to go back to work financially. I wanted to stay home. And I didn't, you know, I wanted, you know, I was very conflicted about the whole thing, but then the stress of it was too much. And around 5 months, 4 or 5 months, I remember it was on Mother's Day. I joke, it's like, I write about it in the book, like it's like the worst Mother's Day present ever. I started having intrusive thoughts about being a pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there had in my family, there had been an instance of someone being assaulted, a child being assaulted, and it basically like ruined that person's life and then ruined everyone's life around that person. And it was just like so intense. So I've always grown up that, like, you know, pedophilia is like the worst thing in the entire universe. Like, that's just what it is. And it is the root of all problems and yada, yada. So when your mind is like tricking you into thinking that you are a pedophile, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no rational reason. Like, there's no rational thing. Like, I'm a high school teacher. I don't even like, other than my children, I don't even really like little kids. Like, like I had to teach in like an elementary school setting once. And it's like, oh my God, is this over? Like, I'm like watching the clock. Like, please, Jesus, give me strength. Get me out of here. You know, so the fact that I could even, like, my rational mind knew that that wasn't a thing, but I wasn't in a rational mind.
Right. You know? Yes. Yes.
So it's like, you trick yourself into things like that. And, you know, you have these like visual pictures. I used to watch like Law and Order Special Victims Unit, which was always a terrible idea, but like, you know, you'd have these like pictures flash in your head of like a dead body of a kid somewhere. And I was like, what kind of monster does this happen to? You know, like, this is crazy. Like, I'm a monster. And I was like, you know, if this is my reality and this is who I am, I'm going to kill myself. And so I have also confession. So I confessed to my parents, and my parents, believe it or not, didn't make me feel better because I was like, I'm a pedophile and I'm like going to kill myself. And they were like, we love you anyway. We don't care who you are, like blah, 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 which was not what I wanted. You know, like, it was the most loving thing in the entire world that you could say to someone, but it like didn't make me feel better. Right. So I confessed it to my brother, and he was like, oh, Jess, that's OCD. Like, that's like a textbook one. And I was like, oh, it is? And he was like, yeah. And the only thing I knew about OCD was from like watching The Aviator. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And my house is a mess. Like, I am not a stereotypical, like, I don't fit any of the things I thought I knew about OCD, right? Don't wash my hands that much. I wish my house was clean. So he's like, well, what are you doing to avoid, like, because I didn't like giving baths. I didn't like changing diapers, you know, things like that. And I was like, but my house isn't clean. I can't be OCD. And he's like, well, what are you avoiding? And I'm like, well, I don't like doing this. I sleep with a bra on. He's like, okay, you need to stop sleeping with a bra on or it's going to turn into a winter coat. He's like, you know, like you need, like, so he kind of gave me the tools as like a lay person to be like exposure therapy, you know? He's like, you need to go see someone. Like, you need to like go get professional help. So I was like, okay. So I found some help. And I'm sure you know this because you work in the mental health field, right? That not all help is created equal.
Right.
And not all professionals are. And my therapist was wonderful. She was very, very nice, but this was not her strong suit, I would say. Like, it wasn't her area. It wasn't her area of expertise. And I don't fault her for that. I would say probably postpartum OCD is not a lot of people's expertise in fairness. And so I was like, you know, I didn't want to go on medicine because I didn't want to stop breastfeeding. And there was no universe. If I wasn't eating ham, I wasn't taking an SSRI while I was breastfeeding. That wasn't going to happen. I don't care what you showed me. Right. So it was like, I was going to suck this up and make it through. And then after my daughter weaned, you know, I had done some like CBT techniques, cognitive behavior therapy techniques. I had read this really super helpful book that's eluding me right now, but it, you know, it talks about like the four steps, brain lock. That's it. Brain lock, freeing yourself from obsessive compulsive disorder. And that had really helped me. But by November, like by 10 months, I was not well. And finally I went on medication, which I had really tried very hard not to do. I exercised like crazy. Like, I really went above and beyond to not do that. And it's very common with like OCD. I had to go on a high dose and it took it a long time for it to like really work, but it finally did kick in and I got better, significantly better. Life became...
Can I ask what did you notice initially in terms of relief or feeling better?
So, the intrusive thoughts settled down. Like, you might even still have them, but you could like flick them away. Like, it was like, oh yeah, that's OCD, you know, like gone, bye. And that made life so much better. Being able to do that, you know, just being able to, because by the end I was starting to get depressed, you know, like I was starting to not care about fashion, which I always loved, or like what I was eating, like, you know, I'd lost weight, which was like, you know, yeah, you lose weight. And it's like, but I don't even like, I'd rather be fat and happy than like miserable, you know?
Totally. Yes.
Yeah. So it was just like one of those kind of things. And so that kind of stuff went away. I was able to like enjoy life more. The intrusive thoughts got better. I not only like, cause in the beginning of CBT for me, like I could tell myself things like, you're clearly not a pedophile. Like, this is stupid, right? But I didn't feel it. Like, I knew it, but I didn't feel it.
Right.
But once the serotonin got in, then it was like, oh yeah, that's really embarrassing. Like, yeah, that's really stupid. Like, you know, you feel stupid because it's like, that was so great. Like, that was so irrational, you know? So things, you could get perspective on what was irrational.
This podcast is supported by Factor. If you want stress-free and ready-to-eat meals for you and your family, then Factor it is. These meals are fresh and crafted by chefs, and all of that means that in 2 minutes, you can be eating a quality meal that you can really taste because it's never been frozen. You just heat and serve. Yesterday for lunch, I had the honey mustard chicken with green beans and potatoes, and it was so full of flavor. And it was also just the right amount of food to keep me going for the day and feeling good with the amount of protein that I needed. And what's cool is I'm going out of town for a little bit, and it was really easy to put the delivery on pause and set it up for when I return. Head to factormeals.com/momandmind50 and use code momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMANDMIND50 at factormeals.com/MOMANDMIND50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sure, like, yeah. But to your point, that is such a real struggle, that to be able to know something, and that almost can, if it feels so different than what you know to be true, that can almost make it feel, you know, that much worse. Because yeah. You're like, I know that this doesn't make sense. Why yeah. can't I just like
feel it?
Yeah. 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 Or not think it anymore, or get over it, yeah. quote unquote, get over it, or, you know, all those things you tell yeah. yourself. Oh, it's hard.
Yeah. And it's you, and like with OCD, like it's like this string that you just want to pull. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not right, right? You know that if you pull the string, it's going to unravel the sweater. But you're like, but that little freaking string is there. Mm-hmm. And I just want to tug it. So like that, it's like the biggest itch you've ever encountered. But you know, if you itch it, it's going to turn into a gunshot wound, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But like, you just want to itch it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the itchiest thing. So it's like
that, like the that, obsessive part. And then yeah, not doing, like, the compulsive part.
Or just think about it. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, because to me, it was like, just think about it. Okay, just for 1 minute. Well, how many pedophiles could potentially live on the block? Start thinking. Okay, well, if there's 6% in the population, then that means how many people live on, you know, like that thought, like you just mm-hmm. want to pull the string so that yeah. it goes.
Right.
Right. And like when on the medication for me, I was like, all right, well, there's a string coming out of the sweater. That's life. You know, like, don't touch mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm. You
know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I know it's gonna pull, like,
so much easier,
you know. Yeah. Like, it was just, it made things so much easier. It made like life more enjoyable, and it took a lot of the guilt away. Yeah, it was a big game changer. But again, I went through a primary to do that, and so she had said to me, I was like, you know, I knew I wanted to have two kids. And I was like, that was such a night. It was amazing. Like, my child was amazing, and my experience with her was amazing. But everything else was such a nightmare that I was like, if I don't do this now, I'm never going to do it. Like, I can't physically get myself back into it to have a second. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, we got to do this like soon, or I'm not going to do it. And the primary was like, oh, well, you only need to be on it for like 3 to 6 months, and then you're good to go off. Because that's what happens when you go to a primary doctor for psychiatric help. So it was great. And so I did it. I went off. I got pregnant right away, and I felt better. Like, I was super confident. Like, I was like, I got this. I know what's happening. I have a 50-50 percent shot of this happening again. It's not going to happen. I know what's happening. I'm going to do everything right this time. Like, I know what this is. Mm. The pedophile stuff was gone. The SID stuff was significantly gone. Like, I got this. And I was good. Like, I had a good pregnancy. I mean, I was a whale, but I was like, I mean, I gained like 90 pounds or something insane, but I was like, I didn't even care. Like, life was like good. And then I had the baby, and the delivery was better. I was able to like not use drugs, which I was really excited about, to like have a natural childbirth, because I wasn't able to do that with my first. Mm. Like, I was like killing the game in my mind. Like,
right.
You know, and my two-year-old, she was two at the time. Once my second daughter was born, my two-year-old turned into like a psycho. She was like, she went into like the terrible twos. Yeah. I thought she may have been suffering from sociopathy, but I had the easiest baby in the world. So I'm like killing this motherhood game. I'm taking them to library classes. Like, life feels good. And then at 6 weeks, I stopped sleeping completely.
Yikes.
Boom. Oh. It was like hammer immediate dropped.
Oh.
in hindsight, it wasn't immediate. Like, there's always little things that creep up, right? Mm-hmm. That, but like, you know, things start to get upsetting, so you avoid them. Like, mm-hmm. I read mm-hmm. something and it's like, oh, I can't watch that on TV. That's going to upset me. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, yeah. little things like yeah. that until yeah. it gets to the point where you can literally only watch Project Runway on TV. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only yes. thing you can watch because everything else is upsetting, you know? But
yeah.
like,
yeah.
at the time, you don't realize that that's what it is because uh-huh. it's like these gradual things. So at 6 weeks, I completely stopped sleeping.
Thanks.
And was not, and then just wasn't doing well. My therapist retired, went into like institutional practice or whatever. I always joke, I scared her out. I scared her out of practice. And then my midwives were lovely and great at birth and should not have been giving me postpartum care, in my opinion. You know, they just weren't equipped. They gave me Ambien to help me sleep, which did not help me sleep at all. For whatever reason, apparently I was just like, you hear those stories of like people still operating machinery, but they're asleep. That did not happen. I was wide awake.
Wow. Not feeling tired?
Oh no, I was exhausted all the time. I felt like exhausted, like my bones were tired, my yeah, hair was tired.
Yeah.
Like I was exhausted, but I couldn't shut down. Like the shutting down was not going to happen. And so I went in to the midwife. She gave me, I think, like 25 milligrams of Zoloft, I want to say, or something like that. Mm. Something that, like, when I finally got to see a psychopharmacologist, he was like, yeah, that's not a therapeutic dose for like an aunt. I was like, cool. good.
Right.
So I had to stop breastfeeding, which I felt like huge trauma about.
This is still like how far into postpartum?
This is now 6 weeks postpartum with my second. Mm. And so I had to stop breastfeeding because I wanted to take a Xanax and I wanted to go on Zoloft and I wanted to go even like, and I didn't care what anyone said. Like if I took any medicine, I was like, nope, not doing it. My cousin's almost a genius and she was bottle fed. She's fine. Like this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I weaned and then I would take like a Xanax and it didn't even like dent the anxiety that I was feeling. And then I would feel significantly worse afterwards. Like I would rebound mm-hmm. and then be like crazy. So I went back to my primary, which was what the person who had helped me last time. And she gave me trazodone and I finally like got some sleep, felt good. And she was like, she put me to a psychopharmacologist and she was like, you need to go see like a professional. This is not my area. Cause I had called her like twice about like, you know, like, what do I do or whatever? And she was like, yeah, this is not for me. Like you need
yeah.
to see
yeah.
for real. So I did. I got in with someone and he was great. And we started the long road to recovery and it was a long road, you know, like I said before, I need high doses and it took me months to get better. And that was
true. Cause you had to ramp up dosing.
He started me on a high dose. He started me like I was on trazodone. Then he started me on 20 milligrams of Lexapro. He was like, we're going to hit this hard. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, you're going to battle through it. Cause that's what it is. And like, so I tried that. And even with that, like I had small ticks that you could tell it was working. Like I was starting to sleep a little bit better. Like, but I was still like, I was living in a panic attack.
Oh my gosh.
Like, I don't even
know. How long did that phase last? That like living in a panic attack feeling?
Probably a month.
It's a long time.
Yeah, it was real. It was real. And like it was so bad that like the OCD didn't even, I kind of almost even stopped having OCD because like I knew anytime I started to feel it, I was like, oh, that's OCD. But it was like, but I still want you to feel terrible anyway.
Oh gosh.
So you had the anxiety,
but you didn't have to obsess.
I guess the obsession was, am I ever going to sleep again? And am I ever going to get better again? So those were like my loops.
Yep,
you know what I mean? Those were the thought loops that I was having, but I was just basically like living in a panic attack all the time. You know, that heightened awareness, the heightened heartbeat, it just felt like my insides was on fire all the time, you know?
That's brutal.
And
still not like you're not sleeping still really like through the night.
So the trazodone helped. I started sleeping. Like, it wasn't amazing sleep. It wasn't the most restorative sleep in the universe, but like eventually it became like I was sleeping okay. Like I would wake up in the morning. I always like would joke that like the mornings were the worst. Like I would like wake up at like 5 a.m. and like just like want to cry. Like just like I can't make it through the day today. Oh my God. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It was so intense. But you know, I would exercise like a lot to try and like get the, you know, they say like an hour of exercise is like 4 hours of an SSRI. So I got like Beachbody on demand and like was like boot camp crazy in my living room, like
just trying to
know I was
like,
crazy. You could tell by looking at me. Like I was like working out so hard. And it helped. It did help like significantly. And I just like crawled my way back. It probably took like 6 months to get like relatively back. I had like in the process of all of that with the med management stuff, I panicked about taking the trazodone and the Lexapro at the same time. So I was like, I'm not going to take both. Like, I don't want to be over medicated. So I was like, I'm going to just like do one. And when I started titrating off of the trazodone, I mistook, like, trazodone's non-addictive forming, but I took the insomnia because I would like wake up in a panic. And I thought that that was me having withdrawals from the trazodone. Oh. Like I didn't know what was happening.
Right. So that was something you kind of decided to do on your own without yes. like the psychiatrist didn't know.
He was like, trazodone's non-habit forming. Like you can be on it. And I was like, okay, but I don't want to be on it. And he was like, okay, well then I guess don't take it. Like, what do you want? You know, like, it was kind of like, what are you going to do at that? I don't know.
Yeah.
So he's
yeah.
like, all right, well, don't take it then, I guess. So then I was like, in my mind, convinced that I had formed a habit to it. So I was like, not going to take it. And then.
Oh, I see.
So in the process of this, like not sleeping, I had a ovarian cyst burst.
Oh my gosh.
I ended up going to the ER, and in my mind, I couldn't tell if this was in my mind. Like, I didn't know what was like, is this actual pain? Am I in labor? Like, could I be in labor? Could I be pregnant again?
Oh,
like,
gosh,
I'm 4 months postpartum. Like, how is this happening? Like, can you get pregnant when you're pregnant? Like, I'm like panicking. Like, I'm like, what is going on in my life right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like really intense. So I ended up like at that moment, and I was still doing really poorly because this was at the beginning of I had just started seeing this psychopharmacologist like a week prior when the cyst burst and everything.
Oh my gosh.
And I had been up for like 24 hours from the hospital. And my husband was like, I got to go to work. And so he was like handing me the baby and my 2-year-old. And I had come home from the hospital and I was like, I can't do this. Like I can't be with them alone all day today. Like I can't do it. And he was like, all right, well, I'll take a couple of hours off, go get some sleep. And I was like, okay. And then like, I went to go lay down and he took them for like a walk. And like in the book, I call it like my yellow wallpaper moment. Have you ever read that short story, The Yellow Wallpaper? Like that was my moment. Like I was like, I laid down, I was on fire, but I couldn't sleep. Like I was like so exhausted and the anxiety was so high. And I was like, and I just like almost disassociated. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm having these racing thoughts. I got up, I had no shoes on. I walked outside, like, but like the grass was weird colors and it was like a wong, wong, wong kind of feeling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
super intense.
Like,
yeah.
Like super intense. And I was like, where am I going to go? Like, I feel like I'm on fire right now. Like if I jump in this water, what will happen? Like it was, I was totally like disassociating, you know, and I had no one to call at that point. I called my old therapist. She wasn't working anymore. And I got in touch. I had started with a new therapist and she fortunately was like, okay, this is, you know, you're having a panic attack. Like you need to like breathe through this. Like let's like, she like kind of talked me down for a minute and she's like, but you need to get in touch with your psychopharmacologist. So like I remember like I called my best friend who I had just met with my daughter like a year prior. She's now my best friend. At the time she was just like a close friend, a good friend. And I called her and I said, you know, I'm waiting to hear back from my doctor, but I'm really not doing well. Like, can you come to my house? And there was like a pile of wood. And I just remember I'm sitting on the pile of wood and she was on her way to like a really important job. Like it was like the first day on her job. And she without hesitation was like, I'll be there in a minute. And came.
That's super
and like,
cool.
Yeah. And like sat next to me and I'm clearly like mentally out of it. You know, like I'm just not there. And she held my hand and she was like, it's going to be okay.
Mm.
You know?
Wow.
And it was the most amazing experience of my life because I didn't feel like I was going to be okay. Do you know what I mean? But just like my feet, like so far, all of my craziness was within my immediate family, you know?
Mm.
And I didn't want to go to a hospital. Like I was afraid of being unemployable. I was afraid of not being able to like take care of my family. I was afraid of the stigma of mental health.
Yeah.
So to tell her that and to have her say like, I love you and I'm going to be your friend anyway, you know?
That's amazing.
Sorry.
No, that's just amazing. Like those are those moments where like the lifeline came when you needed it and it worked.
Yeah. 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 And then I call her husband and he was very funny. We always have like a funny joke and he was like, man, hormone's a bitch, right? I love that you said that. Do you know what I mean? Like it just wasn't what I was expecting to be a reaction, you know, like when you say something that I thought was so embarrassing and so stigmatizing that he just like got it, you know?
That's cool.
And that was like the road to my recovery was that, you know, like I had a nice group of people that were gentle and that didn't, you know, that loved me anyway, you know?
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
It
was.
And it's not always available.
No.
Like you had it when you needed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was why I wrote the book. You know, I wrote a book about my experience because I recognize my privilege, you know, like I am, you know, upper middle class from an educated family, from, you know, a brother who's a doctor, who works in medicine with friends, a supportive husband, like,
right.
Like I have guilt about how good I have it and that could still happen to me and I could still feel that way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And I know that like there are people who don't have it how I have it and have it how I had it or worse. You know what I mean?
So that's my
mission. You know, I wanna like help people and let them know that there is hope and that there is a way out and that, you know, like if no one else is here for you, I'm here for you. Not in like a professional. You need to go see a medical professional. Do you know what I mean? But like, I love you and I will, and I'm here for you. And like, I see you, you know?
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
And so needed what you're doing. And I mean, sharing your story, but writing the book and making it accessible. So, you know, like the people can find it and read it and you sharing your story. This is the lifeline for somebody else. who's hearing themselves in your story and who's going to go get the help because they know exactly what you're describing, even if it's not the same circumstances or the same intrusive thoughts or whatever. This is why this is powerful. Like sharing the story this is real.
Yeah.
Super real.
Yeah. No, thank you for doing it. You know, it's very helpful to share stories and, you know, to the capacity that you're able to hear it, right? Like if it's like too triggering or it makes things worse, like obviously not good, but like, you know, to know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and there's resources and we're getting we're so much better. Like we're so much better than we were 12 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Yeah. Still some ways to go. And considering what you've been through, you know, either if you were to tell somebody else who was going through the exact same thing or what you would kind of tell past you now, what are some things that you wish you would have known or you want people to know or to do or consider?
So like goal, right? My mission here is to let people know that your mental health is your physical health, right? Like if you had cancer, you wouldn't feel shame and hide from treatment.
Right.
You wouldn't vacillate about taking a pill or going to get chemo. I suffered for so long, tried everything. Like I cut out foods. Like I you know, some of them were helpful, you know, used essential oils. Like, I mean, like you name it. If it like whatever was on the back of a cereal box, I tried. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I wouldn't take a pill. And I'm not saying that all, and like, I, like when I finally did, like, it was very hard. Like, it's not like here's a Tylenol, this is going to make it better. Like it's a process, but you have to look at your mental health. It is your physical health. Mm-hmm. It is not something imaginary. It is not something to feel stigmatized or embarrassed about. Mm-hmm. I have a generalized anxiety disorder that I will have for the rest of my life. I tried once I was in remission for like 3 or 4 years. I tried to get off of my SSRIs. I had titrated down. The second it was all out of my system, I relapsed like a hammer, like a guillotine relapsed. Like I will probably have to be on a pill for the rest of my life. And that's okay. I don't want to be. Every day there's a little thread that's like, maybe you could try, you know, but like, and that's not everybody's story. Some people don't need it and some people will never need it. Some people need it for a little bit and come off. But like if I had diabetes, if I had high blood pressure, I wouldn't hide that from my mom's group. I wouldn't not say it in mixed company. Right. Do you know what I'm saying?
For
like,
sure.
You wouldn't hide the fact that you have to take like a Lipitor, right? You would just say it.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't feel that way. And that's where we are. Like, yes, there are some people who are over-medicated and yes, medicine and the pharmaceutical companies and blah, blah, blah. Like, yes, all of those things can be true. Right.
Yeah. Yep.
But at the end of the day, there are times it is life-saving. Like my quality of life, I have been able to be a better mother, which is, you know, the host of everything for my meaning of being is to be able to be a good mother.
Yeah.
And be a good person, be a good human, you know, and wife. And I'm able to do that because of medical treatments I received, you know? Mm-hmm. And I can talk to everyone about it and not feel ashamed because I'm healthy, because it's hard to do that when you're healthy, when you're not healthy, right?
Right, right.
But when I'm healthy, like, it's not embarrassing. Like, when I tore my ACL, I wasn't like, oh, don't look at my brace. I crutched around, you know, like that's what it is. Like, this is life, you know, and that's what you need. And that's where we need to get to as a society, where we can give each other grace and like recognize that there is a spectrum for mental illness and that you can be anywhere on the spectrum in life, and at different points in life, you can be at different places on it as well, you know?
Yep, and that, like, that's so true.
And that's okay. And we need to give people grace and actually look at it as something that can be treatable, right? And like treat it.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, sounds straightforward, but obviously. a lot of people who've been on the journey know that it can be hard to just get the help that you need sometimes.
Of course. And I've said this before, I did a TEDx talk about this, and I say it in there that when you break your leg, you don't have to walk to the orthopedic on your broken leg.
Right.
Right. You can get a crutch, or someone can carry you, or you call an ambulance and they take you and you get the proper treatment.
Yep.
But with mental health, it's your brain that's trouble. And mm-hmm. it's your brain you need to look online, to call someone, to
yes.
talk to someone on
yes.
a phone, to know the questions that you have to ask.
Yep.
To do all of these things, it all requires your brain, and your brain isn't working well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're it's just so overwhelming. I can't even tell you, I would stare at the phone and have to go in my mind, okay, what kind of voice am I going to use so that I don't sound crazy, so mm-hmm. that they take me seriously? What's the mm-hmm. vocab I can use? Mm-hmm. I don't want them to take my kid. What can I, I'm planning all of
so
these
much.
Things that I can say.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And then it's just and that's not what you have to do with any other medical condition. And that's what makes it so difficult and so unique at the same time.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you said that so well. And I hope that people who are listening can really hear that. It's 100% what you said. Putting the burden on somebody who's struggling to fix everything themselves and just be better, whatever those the quips are that people say, snap out of it or whatever. That's not how this works. So I know you didn't give us all of your story in your book, and it's all written out there for everyone to read. And what is it called, and where can people find it?
So my book is called A Dance in the DSM, My Tango with Postpartum Depression, Anxiety, and OCD. It's available on Amazon and Barnes and Nobles and, most places that, you can buy books, they can order it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, it tells my whole story in more detail. I try and have the funny parenting stories and the reality of parenting as well kind of woven in. So it's a story of hope. It's not just it's intense at times, but it's not just a big punch in the face of all the sad stuff all at once. There's there's funny things that go on. I think hopefully funny things that go on in between too, that I try mm-hmm. and interweave, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. In the way you've told your own story now, I'm sure that the book is written in sort of the same voice as your. I appreciate that you're sort of able to bring lightness to things that for now feel lighter, but that there's also some real depth and some real reality to your experience that at least, sharing it with us here today, I'm sure is evident in the book as well. And yeah, I hope that everybody can, especially for people who have struggled. I have shared a little bit of my own story too with anxiety and depression and OCD in postpartum and being totally shocked by it. It's brutal. It is brutal. And it's hard to know that, it's hard to feel rather that you're alone in it. So I hope that people can go and find your book and see parts of themselves represented there and feel just like all the things you're saying, just busting through this stigma and calling BS on all of it and just get the help you need. I love
that. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, definitely. And it's just, and that's kind of the title is, it's a dance in the DSM. You don't have to live. I always joke, I don't have to live there. Sometimes I am asymptomatic and mm-hmm. living the dream. And sometimes I'm not, and I need some help. And, I dance in and out of it, and that's, I don't have to live there. And I'm not going to live out of it.
Right. Right.
What it is, that's
absolutely.
Life. It's ups and downs,
Absolutely.
But there is going to be ups, and you just have to hold on to that hope,
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jessica. It's been a delight to talk with you and hear your story. And I just appreciate you sharing.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity. I love all the short stories that you share, and it's really important.
Thank you.
Please do connect with Jessica at jessicacuomo.com, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Jessica Cuomo. And you can find her book. It's available everywhere online. For anyone who has experienced intrusive thoughts or perinatal mental health conditions, please know that you're not alone on this journey. There are so many of us who have been through something similar to what you're experiencing. And even if it's not exactly what you're going through,
We really, really understand how hard it is, and we are hopeful for you on your healing journey. Thank you for being with us. Until next time.
Please find the Mom and Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.